Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The days and weeks ahead will be critical. Our negotiations have made progress, but gaps remain. And there are people in both our countries and beyond who oppose a diplomatic resolution. My message to you, the people of Iran, is that together we have to speak up for the future we seek.
You know, I was thinking maybe America wants a crazy president. I think maybe we're praying for the wrong thing. I mean, maybe he's the perfect man for the crazy times we live in. Maybe he's the perfect president for a crazy nation. Anyway, that's just a thought. So I said, look, you can spend the whole day showing the world how crazy he is and how bad he is and how anti-American he is. And some of the audience will say, yeah, man. The others will say, you know what, he's right, but I don't want to hear it anymore. So I said, well, what the heck am I going to do here? I got 3 hours to talk here. I prepared for all day long. Well, given the fact that I have a body of literature behind me that goes back to 1965, I went into the archive room of the Savage Studio, and I put my hands on one of the first publications I ever worked on. You're not going to believe this collector's item. It was a magazine in New York City's literary world called Exit. Urbi et Orbi from July 1965. Exit magazine, Urbi et Orbi. I have one copy left. And I looked inside of this thing and I said, what kind of stuff was I writing then? Urbi et Orbi, to the city and to the world. In this magazine, there's an interview with Malcolm X. Believe it or not. There is an article by Bertrand Russell entitled The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed, which changed my life. It begins like this. And then my own article, by the way, which is Who Is at the Helm, which gets us back to the fact that we have no leadership and what I wrote when I was a young man, very young man, believe me, young. But 1965 was a year in American history that was a turning point. It was just at the beginning of the Vietnam War. There was no real anti-war movement yet. It was just beginning. The beatniks were still around. The hippies had not yet come in. It was a turning point, and I was involved in this little magazine. And Bertrand Russell wrote an article entitled The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed, which I reprinted in this magazine from 1950. I just want to read you a few lines. One of the persistent delusions of mankind is that some sections of the human race are morally better or worse than others. This belief has many different forms, none of which has any rational basis. It is natural to think well of ourselves, and thence, if our mental processes are simple, of our sex, our class, our nation, and our age. But among writers, especially moralists, a less direct expression of self-esteem is common. They tend to think ill of their neighbors and acquaintances. And therefore to think well of the sections of mankind to which they themselves do not belong. Lao Tzu admired the pure men of old who lived before the advent of Confucian sophistication. Tacitus and Madame de Stael admired the Germans because they had no emperor. Locke thought well of the intelligent American because he was not led astray by Cartesian sophistries. Is this too much for you? I realize it's not Democrat-Republican. I realize this may kill the show completely. But I think I'll continue. Because it's about the superior virtue of the oppressed, where some of you, liberals especially, are deluded into believing that some sections of the human race are morally better than the rest of us. And so, rather, Bertrand Russell writes it this way, he says, a rather curious form of this admiration for groups to which the admirer does not belong is the belief in the superior virtue of the oppressed, subject nations, the poor, women and children. You hear this? So that explains liberalism. That explains Obama believing that the Iranians and the Palestinians are the oppressed and the Israelis are the conquerors. In the 18th century, while conquering America from the Indians, reducing the peasantry to the condition of pauper laborers, and introducing the cruelties of early industrialism, what happened? The people love to sentimentalize about the noble savage and the simple annals of the poor. Virtue, it was said, was not to be found in courts, but court ladies could almost secure it by masquerading as shepherdesses. As the French Revolution went on, the superior virtue of the poor became a party question and has remained so ever since. Now, we're living in America where the superior virtue of the poor is now a central theme of the Democrat Party. While to the rest of us, we know that that's utter nonsense to class an entire group of people in that way. Bertrand Russell goes on and says, nationalism introduced in the 19th century a substitute for the noble savage, the patriot of an oppressed nation, the Greeks until they had achieved liberation from the Turks, the Hungarians until the Ausgleich of 1867, the Italians until 1870, and the Poles until after the 1914-18 war were regarded romantically as gifted poetic races, too idealistic to succeed in this wicked world. The Irish were regarded by the English as possessed of a special charm and mystical insight until 1921, when it was found that the expense of continuing to oppress them would be prohibitive. This is beautiful writing. I'm not going to read any more. Now here comes Hillary Clinton. I just have to read this. And again, he writes this back then, back 1950 in my magazine from 1965, Bertrand Russell again continuing, women being the objects of the strongest emotions have been viewed even more irrationally than the poor or the subject nations. I am thinking not of what poets have to say, but of the sober opinions of men who imagine themselves rational. The church had two opposite attitudes. On the one hand, woman was the temptress who led monks and others into sin. Robert, stop it. On the other hand, she was capable of saintliness to an almost greater degree than man. Theologically, the two types were represented by Eve and the Virgin. In the 19th century, the temptress fell into the background. There were, of course, bad women. But Victorian worthies, unlike St. Augustine and his successors, would not admit that such sinners could tempt them and did not like to acknowledge their existence. A kind of combination of the Madonna and the Lady of Chivalry was created as the ideal of the ordinary married woman. She was delicate and dainty. She had a bloom which would be rubbed off by contact with the rough world. She had ideals which might be dimmed by contact with wickedness, like the Celts and the Slavs and the noble savage, but to an even greater degree. She enjoyed a spiritual nature which made her the superior of man, but unfitted for business or politics or the control of her own fortune. This point of view, he wrote, is still not entirely extinct. And I'll stop right there. Written in 1950 by Bertrand Russell. I know you're saying, what the heck is Savage doing right now? Robert, should I continue with any of this, or is it too intellectual? Does this blow off the cigar-smoking, meat-eating, let's say, liberal-hating, Obama-bashing member of the audience? I don't know if they can take it. They may think I'm a communist for reading this to them. I can never tell. Any sign of sensitivity or intellect is frowned upon by the true blue American voter. So I have to be very cautious here. Well, now, so I'm looking in this magazine, Exit, Urbi et Orbi from 1965, which I was an associate editor of. I was very proud of that. I didn't make a dime, but I helped sell it on the streets of Manhattan. And I thought I was an intellectual genius in doing so. And we reprinted articles by Bertrand Russell and interviews with Malcolm X and things like that. And then I wrote an original article, which is very, very political today, which I just found, and I'm not ashamed to tell you, I'm going to read to you. Then you'll decide what my politics are when I read Who Was at the Helm, written by Michael Savage in 1965, and I'll bring this to you. Here's what I wrote. Recently was brought to my attention that Bertrand Russell and a large body of intellectuals delivered a signed article to the British press, which said that mankind must immediately undertake to find new sources for its food supply. The group insisted that should we not immediately act upon this call, we shall find ourselves a species without nourishment. An immediate action was undertaken by the officials in charge. The article was suppressed and appeared in but two British newspapers. The situation related above is indicative of a major problem of mankind, the young savage wrote. We as a species have not yet insisted that our leaders be men of mind and vision, that is, brains. And then I make a long comparison to a simple creature called the Hydra. I compared it to a Hydra, a tiny sea creature with a half-inch body, which I said is excellent for study in that we may easily observe its activities on a cellular level. And I talked about that when faced with an enemy, the Hydra calls upon cells that are specially equipped for its protection. These cells, the nematoblasts, enclose stinging capsules that have a barbed process of cytoplasm shaped much like a spear. Thus, the problem of defense is met without confusion as to which group of cells is to react. Let me pause right there. Obviously, the police are our defense cells. The military are our defense cells. And yet we have an autoimmune disease in our society which attacks our defense cells. Do you understand what I'm saying? They let radical Muslims into the country who will kill us. They defend radical bums in the gutters of Ferguson instead of the police who were trying to protect life and property. You get it? And then I go on. See, I'm interspersing current events with the young Michael Savage's views of nature and man. And I went on. The nematoblasts, which are obviously evolved for the job of defense, are signaled by the creature's nerve network, and they act. No helter-skeltering of indecision, just decisive action. However, within the creature, mankind, this is not the case. Certainly it responds to a dangerous enemy by sending out its defense cells, soldiers. But it has not yet decided if its cells of defense are naturally equipped for the job. True, there are specialized forces of Marines, commandos, and other expertly trained cells of defense. Still, it has not realized yet that all cells which are made into soldiers are not necessarily evolved for that duty. Obviously, certain of its soldiers would be better as a part of its civilian force. And I go on from there and comparing the Hydra to man. And then I really bring it around to the fact that we have no leadership. And I come to this. Would the Hydra place a cell specially equipped and obviously suited for one task at the most crucial task of direction? Certainly not. Just as the Hydra survives because its functions are well directed by a nerve network, so must the survival of mankind be directed by a network of minds. And then in bold caps, I wrote this. Those men who have mastered the powers of the intellect should be duty-bound to serve as brain tissue for the creature called mankind. And I go into a whole story about how we're dying as an organism because we have men, obviously, who were evolved to function as butchers, grocery managers, cooks, out of place at the helm of power. You see what I'm saying? In other words, Obama was never, ever made to be the leader of the free world, let alone this nation. The most this man ever could have been were it not for a distorted political system that was bought and sold by special interests. The most this man ever could have been would have been a college provost. He doesn't even have the mindset to be a college president because that would require attending meetings and listening to others. He couldn't even be a college president. The man is really only fit to be a college provost with only about 2 contact hours a week with the students who he detests and looks down upon. Well, there it is, the past and the present colliding today on this day of a solar eclipse on the Savage Nation. Supermoon eclipse, rather. The moon eclipsed the sun. Nothing happened to me. Did your pets respond to the eclipse? Nothing. I saw nothing. Teddy didn't even yawn, didn't burp. Nothing. Didn't even roll over in his sleep. I felt nothing. The earth didn't move under my feet. I can hear my deceased father saying to me, "What the heck do you mean a supermoon eclipse? What are you living in a dream world for? Go out and make a living. That's what matters." And was he wrong? And here's a headline for you. The Pope is going to dine with gay and transgender inmates. Which brings me back to the opening of the show. Maybe it's good that we have a crazy Pope and a crazy president for the crazy times in which we live. I'm Michael Savage. That opens up Open Mic to Mike Friday. The phone number is 855-400-7282. If you care to get up or down, high or low, highbrow or lowbrow, that's where I go. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. I never liked Johnny Mathis. He was too saccharine for me. I love the movie Play Misty for me with Clint Eastwood, I'll tell you that. That Jaguar XK140 drophead coupe in Monterey. He was a DJ on a radio station. He was stalked by a stalking woman. Remember that movie? But the scenes of him driving after the radio show on the Highway 1 stuck in my mind forever. And now I'm stuck with an XKE that I... No, it's a good car. The poor thing sits there crying now because I don't drive it anymore. But that Hellcat, they stopped making it. Wow, what an investment that was. Should have bought five of them. Line number two, Misty on KSFO Radio. What's on your mind as I muse away the day?
Wow. Hey, Michael. I wanted to talk to you about Obama. And
oh, God, please. Ma'am, no, Misty, stop. I'm not doing an Obama show today. I can't take it. The word alone gives me nausea and a migraine.
I just want to say one thing. His whole demeanor...
Thanks for the call. No, I'm not doing it. I'm not taking one call on Obama. The word abomination, which I created, says it all to me. The man gives me a migraine. Every time he opens his trap and tries to change things for the worse, tells me all I need to know. I don't want to talk about this. The guy is a nut. The guy is a typical leftist college professor who is way out of his pay scale, abusing the taxpayer, abusing the presidential office, flying around the world on personal business to raise money. It's sickening. Him and his wife are abusing the presidency. Now, what is she doing in Japan? She took her children on a spring break and covered it up like a diplomatic visit. Not one word. See, I did it again. I got triggered. It's like somebody said the wrong word to me. I said I wouldn't do it. I try to go highbrow. I try to go intellectual. I try to go Bertrand Russell. I try to go Urbi et Orbi. I try to go 1965. And look what I wound up. Stuck again in the present. Please don't say Obama to me today.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Obama is a visual. Oh, see, I did it again. I slipped into the Obama bash. There's so much to bash. I mean, how can you stop? But he represents the appearance of a normopath who's actually crazy. He is such a good actor. The man is phenomenal. He's a normopath on the outside and a lunatic on the inside. And don't call me on this. I'm not a psychiatrist. So over the weekend, I'm going to go to Starbucks, and I'm going to engage in a race conversation. I'm going to say, give me a latte and hold the white guilt. Or if you really feel bad, you can go the other way and say, I'll take a latte with a double dose of white guilt. Let's see what happens. Stupid moron. Idiot moron. Look what he tries to do to these poor kids at work there. Forget about us. The normal people. Unbelievable to me. The kids who work there are just making a little living. What does he want from them, the idiot? What's he trying to do? A curry favor with Al Sharpton? CEO Howard Schultz? I don't care if he's worth $2.5 billion. He's a moron. It just proves that you can be rich and stupid. What do you think? Because someone is worth billions of dollars, they're smart? I've met poor people who are brilliant. I met rich people who are morons. It doesn't mean that all poor are smart and all rich are stupid. But believe me, money is not associated with intelligence in every case. And this guy, Schultz from Starbucks, is a classic walking idiot. WABC in New York City, go ahead, please. You're an open mic Friday on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing?
How you doing?
All right, thanks. I'd like to talk about that superior virtue. I was looking about to get a better, clearer understanding of what that is, the past and present of it, and how has it changed over the years, and how is it still alive?
So you heard me read the essay, The Superior Virtue of the Oppressed, which is a sarcastic comment, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So today, we assume because of the liberal lock grip on the nation's mind, we assume that, look at the title, Superior Virtue of the Oppressed. We assume that all African Americans are oppressed and have superior virtue. Isn't that true?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay. We assume that the Palestinians are oppressed and they're superior to the Jews in Israel. Isn't that correct? Isn't that
correct.
What we're supposed to think? We assume women are oppressed and that they have superior virtue to men. Isn't that correct?
Right.
All right, so there it goes. That's what we're talking about. So it's called brainwashing and propaganda to generalize to that extent.
Okay, does this contribute at all to their sense of entitlement that we got going on?
Of course it does. Of course it does. Oh, you're good. You're actually a better interlocutor than I am. I mean, you're setting me up as the... This is like a platonic dialogue where I'm the slave boy and you're the master. I used to love those dialogues between the master and the slave in the ancient Greek dialogues. They were so well thought out. They were beautiful. Remember? Did you ever read any of the Plato or Aristotelian dialogues?
The only thing I could think of is the Apology. I think that was Aristotle, though.
Yes, it was, and I think you're right. Actually, I do think it was Aristotle's dialogues, not Plato's. Plato wrote the Republic, but I read Aristotle's dialogues, which were always between a master and a slave, and he was always trying to prove something in this dialogue between the two. One was brilliant, and the other was supposed to be, let us say, unlearned, but he had tremendous wisdom.
Yeah, pretty good.
So I guess there's the superior virtue of the oppressed going back to ancient Greece.
Yeah, that's not bad. But look at this. See, you said I started in the French Revolution. But then, back then, I could understand how the oppressed actually did have a superior virtue. But now it's done a complete 180, no?
No, that's interesting. Yeah, in other words, you're saying the French peasantry had grievances that were reasonable or rational.
Right.
You could also say that the Russian peasants had grievances that were rational when they overthrew the Tsar and killed his whole family, couldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so now let's take it down home. Let's come to America. Who has the most grievances now?
Oh, well, it's got to be the blacks.
Is that true? Are they oppressed?
No.
Well, no, I didn't say who has. Who do you think is the most oppressed group in America today? The truly most oppressed group in America today.
I would say that the patriotic citizen is the most oppressed.
Now you're good. Now you're playing the slave boy, and I'm the master again. That's good. Look, the fact is today the most targeted segment of our society, whether it be on a college campus or out of the mouth of the fools in the White House or their spokesmouths, is the heterosexual, Christian, white male, especially those in the military or police professions. They are the most targeted of the entire nation.
There you go. Okay.
Okay, that's the absolute reality. Go to a college campus and see what the lunatics are saying.
I go to one every day, sir.
Oh, you're a student?
Yes, sir.
You wouldn't tell me what college, would you?
Suffolk County Community College in Brentwood, New York.
Oh, you're suffering in Suffolk, huh?
Yes, sir. This is my last semester.
Are you near suffering?
Suffering? No. Suffolk.
I'm joking. Because, no, the word suffrage comes up next. I was going to do a whole sequence.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, you said Suffolk State College. I thought it was near suffering, New York.
No, it's on the right hand.
And are you being taught by women suffrage proponents or what?
Well, I'll tell you what. I got one that's a real... She's definitely one of them. And a couple.
Now, what do you mean one of them? You mean a mean-faced, clipped hair type who hates men?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I mean, she's got a pretty face, actually, so it's quite deceiving.
Yeah, and it's also very heartbreaking, I know.
Oh, my God, it's absolutely tragic.
I know. How does that happen? Why do so many women turn against men? I don't understand that. What have men done to make them hated by so many women? Are men that bad as a we're not a species. I mean, we're part of the species, but are men that bad that so many women have such a hatred for them?
I think we've got our share of faults. But
and you mean, I guess the solution is to elect Hillary Clinton. She'll make the world a better place, right?
Oh, no, then we're going to have intense negotiations every 4 weeks.
I don't know. I'd vote for a woman in a second if she were a patriotic nationalist, returning war veteran, hyper-Christian patriot. Thanks for the call. You see, once in a while, we have a little fun in the Savage Nation because we didn't use the O word once in that interchange. Okay, we're back now to unprotected talk. I don't know what the call is going to be like. That was a good one. Wouldn't you say, guys? We'd give that a 10. Yes, the guys are raising their hands on the Skype. When you get a caller you can really interact with who's not going to beat you up with a standard thing he heard on another show, it becomes for interesting radio. You know what I'm saying? So it's a weird day for me. I don't think it's the eclipse. I don't feel good, though. I don't understand it. I have to express myself. In order for me to do this show well today, I actually have to talk about why I don't feel well today. I don't know why. It can't be the eclipse because I didn't feel it. I didn't drink last night. I had one light beer. That can't be the reason. What? Oh, I only drank one light beer. Oh, my God. So that's the reason I have aches and pains and I don't feel good. You know, you make it out like I drink a lot. I don't really drink that much. You know, two drinks a night. In my heyday, yes. Like when I started in radio. I remember I used to tell jokes on the air. Those of you who remember going back to the 90s, I used to affectionately say that American Medical Association said that we should drink two drinks a day for our health, maximum two ounces. And the British Medical Association said that the appropriate amount of alcohol for an average person would be 5 absolute ounces a day. So I said, in that regard, I'm British. Of course, I then got banned in England years later, so I can't say that anymore. But 5 drinks over a period of an evening was really easy to deal with if you were eating and just hanging out. And I did my share of eating and hanging out. And that was that. I never affected me negatively. I never hurt anyone. I never drove anyone over. I got into arguments, yes. But I get into arguments now when I don't drink. So what's the difference? Look what I do for a living and I don't drink. You know, I'll tell you something else that you don't know. Well, maybe it's 2015 now and my anniversary show is Tuesday. I have never, ever had a drink on the air in 20 years. Never. Hold it. Once I did. I tried it once in the 90s when I was a local host. Because people would say, hey, Savage, why don't you have a glass of wine on the air? I said, no, I wouldn't be able to do the show. I remember in the third hour of a local show on KSFO, the last segment, just before the break, I took a drink of scotch. I don't know what it was. I could not focus. I was unable to really formulate a thought and project it through the microphone. Would you believe that? It is so different being in front of a microphone than, let's say, having a drink and talking to people. The focal energy that is required is quite different. Now, I'm not just talking about that for any reason other than it's interesting to me. Meanwhile, ISIS has done it again. Muslim killing Muslim. 137 Shiites killed, 350 injured in mosques in Yemen. Muslim killing Muslim in the religion of peace. You talk about a tragic demise of a religion. This is almost unheard of in modern Muslim history. What's going on now is a result of Wahhabism and this cult of Wahhabism that has been spread from Saudi Arabia. Look it up and see what I'm talking about. This didn't go on through the ages. Yes, in the beginning it did, but this killing others in a mosque, it didn't really happen until modern times as a result of this cancer. KSFO Radio, San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Cody, KSFO. I want to talk about the Hellcat. I heard you mention that you have some trouble putting traction on the ground, and I got to tell you, 707 horsepower is way too much for those tiny little tires they give you. What you got to do is put wider tires on the back, about 305 millimeters, and that ought to do it.
Right, and put. I once had a 85 Mustang when they first came out with the 5-liter convertible. I used to love to drag race that out on the flats in Bolinas, going out to the telegraph station. I'd open it up fully, but that thing, you couldn't hold it on the ground. I had to put sandbags in the back.
Yeah, the wider tires. I've got a car all-wheel drive, and that thing holds the ground like nothing you've ever seen.
No, I don't race this car. In fact, I only have 200 miles on it. I'm putting it on mothballs. I'll let my family sell it in 10 years at an Amicum auction.
Yeah, well,
I mean, you know that they stopped making this car. It's going to be worth a lot of money, right?
Yeah, I saw that I'm not sure if they stopped making it, but I read that they definitely stopped taking orders because there's too many.
Well, here's the thing. They say they're not taking orders, but I doubt they're ever going to make the car again. That's my guess. It's too expensive. They're losing $100,000 a car.
You'd think so, right? I mean,
I know cars really well, and I compare what's in that car. That car is $67,000. That's a $200,000 supercar. If you were to build that car, let's say in a custom shop, that's $250,000 car at least.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So I'm going to put it away now, and that'll be the end of it. I mean, the thing is, it's too much power to begin with. It's a collector's item. It's hard to believe that I'm allowed to even have the car. I'm surprised Obama hasn't banned it yet. All right, thanks for the call. We could do car talk, but please don't call about cars. It's a fun topic. I saw, oh, wait a minute, hold it. I forgot something else I wanted to say, since we're just talking here. I was watching TV last night. I've taken to a new form of, in my life, which is I sit in a dark room in an armchair and watch television in the dark. I kind of like the whole concept of a man alone in a room watching television with no lights on, with a dog near him. There's something very American about it. Man alone in a room with a TV on. I've never done this. I've always been kind of social with a television or watching in bed, you know, with lights on. I've taken to like a somber television watching thing. I never enjoyed it so much. In other words, I'm indulging myself in television watching at night. I'm not even fighting it anymore. It's like eating pizza. Just give in to it and enjoy it, right? I mean, you're going to destroy your body. Just enjoy the pizza while you're eating it. So if you're going to destroy your mind, but you see, I love television. So I watched a Showtime show last night about a man who was an escape artist from prison, in Florida prisons. You know, you'd think as a conservative, I'd have no sympathy for this guy. By the time I got through this guy's life, watching it go on for 2 hours, the man started out as a petty criminal when he was 19. The system was so corrupt, it made him worse and worse and worse. The prison guards beat him almost to death with sticks. He spent months in solitary confinement, which no human being can do without going insane. And then they show the guy as an older man with parole hearings going on. He had one wife who loved this guy and stood by him and a lawyer and went on for years trying to get parole. And it became fascinating to watch this thing. And you know, at the end of it, I was glad to see that they gave him parole and he's out in 2015. He may be out now. I don't remember the guy's name. But it was done by a liberal filmmaker, and it was done, written with a rather liberal, let us say, bent. But so what? The fact is that you have to have sympathy for some of the people who have been, let us say, inadvertently incarcerated for petty crime. Then they get in prison in order to defend themselves from someone who wants to rape them, for example. They get into a fight and they beat the heck out of the other guy. Then they throw him in the hole and they give him 3 more years. Do you understand how it can escalate? And there's a cascade that doesn't necessarily mean the guy is bad. Do you understand that? And you don't have to be a liberal to understand that, do you? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
Don't spoil my fun, darling. I love to keep you.
We're just having fun today. Listen to me. I'll tell you what it's all about. You know, you could be the smartest guy on earth and you could do a terrible radio show. Or you could be a dumb moron and do a great radio show. I mean, look at Howard Stern. You can make a fortune in this business and never have graduated high school. So go figure it out. What you got to do is fake it till you make it. The point of all of this is that you know what radio really is about, talk radio? It is conversation. I get a young guy going to college, he calls. I get a woman who's obsessed hating Obama, she calls. If you want to call, it's 855-407-282. It's all about conversation, which means with verse. And remember the middle word, verse. It's got to have verse in order to have verve. And that's my lecture for the hour. I'll be right back. Be here, be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to The Savage Nation, hour two of this Friday edition. Here's my headline about Muslim killing Muslim in Yemen. Hillary's Arab Spring brings rivers of blood. It's sickening, crazy. The woman should just leave and go to a nunnery. It's not too late. Here's another one from the Religion of Peace. Afghan woman set ablaze by mob for burning Quran. Her parents said she suffered from mental illness. That didn't stop the maniacs from setting her on fire because she burnt the book. You hear the world we're living in? And Obama's bringing in 100,000 a month. Are they being vetted? Does anybody know how many of them are crazy, mentally defective, terrorists, And you believe it? Like an idiot, you believe it's about diversity. Could it be he's just stupid or crazy? Why is it possible for you not to understand that a leader could be stupid or crazy? Why must you assume that if someone is elected, suddenly they're a genius? You know, it's the same thing about a pope. I'm sorry to bash him again. The pope is a nut. Everyone knows that by now. It's like the accidental pope would be the title of that book. How they selected the first non-European pope in 1,200 years, right? How's that working out? Every day you wake up to another lunacy from a pope. He's going to dine with gay and transgender inmates. That flies in the face of every tenet of Christianity, especially Catholicism. So who does this guy represent? Who does Obama represent? How do we wind up with nuts at the top of everything? The answer is nobody else would take the job. A sane person would work for a living and have nothing to do with this lunacy. Here's another one. Federal workers told to probe their unconscious bias. That's called thought crime. That's a thought crime. But this is what happens when you have an incompetent, race-baiting lunatic running the world. Federal workers told to probe their unconscious bias. Now, of course, Obama didn't tell them to do that. You know, let me go back in time, explain what's happening from my perspective. Maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't. I remember back in the 60s, I was working in a publishing company in Manhattan, and I think it was John Lindsay was mayor, a liberal. I liked him very much. He was good-looking and had long hair. I thought he was a great mayor for those reasons. I had no idea what his politics were, nor did I care. He was very photogenic, and he just gave good ads. You know, it was good enough for me as a youngster trying to make a living. I didn't care very much about politics. And then William F. Buckley Jr. of the National Review wanted to run for office, and I was crazy about him. He was so intellectual, so appealing, and I did understand him somewhat, but I really kind of just liked his English accent. I didn't really understand Buckley when I was a kid. I was a pure Anglophile. I thought that anyone who wore a Brooks Brothers suit and could have a lock of hair over their eye and speak with such arch cynicism must be a brilliant man. I had no idea. Well, it turns out he was brilliant. Not everyone who, you know, apes that particular posture is brilliant. But being a poor kid, I thought that, you know, Anglophilia was the way to go. So I went to the publishing company, and I told an older woman, she must have been 35, 40, she was one of the older women, I was in my 20s, that I really liked William F. Buckley Jr., and I wanted to vote for him, and I didn't really know conservative from liberal then. And she said to me, but don't you understand it's not him, but the people who he will bring to office with him who may be dangerous. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, he can't run every department of the city. He has to bring people with him. And since he's a conservative, he's liable to bring some extremist with him to run departments, and it can be very bad for the city. And I thought about it for years, and that explains Obama. He himself is a radical who's bad for the country, but that's not the whole point. The people he's brought with him are 1,000% worse. So now you read federal workers are told to probe their unconscious bias. Who was the extremist who came up with that in the Obama administration? I'm sure he never even met the person. This is what she meant. This is what happens when you vote in an extremist like Obama. I said the word twice in the opening. I said I wouldn't. What can you do? Okay, 855-400-7282 is the phone number. There's no way to get into the show right now. We have so many great topics from the week, if you care to call on them, and the great sound. Today he addressed the Iranians now, where he said hardliners in both our countries oppose a diplomatic resolution. So he now compared anyone in America who opposes Iran getting a nuclear weapon with the maniacs in head scarves in Iran. We're now equal to the mullahs. If we oppose a deal with Iran, we're the mullahs. This is liberalism of its most insane kind. Then mandatory voting was a big issue. So he had his Goebbels come out, named Josh Ernst, and backtrack when he said mandatory voting would be good. So now the spokesmouth, the little Goebbels of the administration in clip 9, listen to this.
The president was not putting forward a specific policy proposal. I think somebody had asked him a pretty open-ended question about campaign finance reform and about the state of elections in this country. And I think the president gave a pretty open-ended answer about a variety of ways in which this challenge could be confronted. You know, he talked about a constitutional amendment that would relate
to... Let me ask you something. I got to do this as a family show. Here's a guy who lies for a living. That's a given. That's what a spokes representative means for a president, anyone. press secretary, liar, professional liar, smooth as silk. Doesn't matter what they say as long as they get through the thing without getting caught, right? What does this guy have to do at night to relax? That's what I want to know. I mean, could you imagine what this man has to do to himself to relax at night after going through this all day long lying for Obama? Unbelievable. I mean, I don't even want to think about it. My mind can't run in those directions. Did that go over well? Did anyone understand that joke? Robert, did you get it? You're a youngster. Okay. Okay. It was actually a joke. Let's see what else was in the news this week. Hillary proposes fun camps for U.S. adults. Here is the woman watching her Frankenstein Arab Spring rage out of control, killing, maiming, blowing up mosques, countries falling like dominoes. And this is what the woman who would be president has to say. Listen to clip 17.
As I have gotten older, I have decided we really need camps for adults. None of the serious stuff, none of the, you know, life challenge stuff, more fun. I think we have a huge fun deficit in America.
Who gave her this? Who told her to say this, Woody? This is like her daughter must have told it to her, like over a Starbucks. They must have talked about race, and she said, no, I got to avoid that. Let me talk about fun, Mom. Mom, if I were you, I would talk about fun. This is so stupid, it's beyond comprehension. The world's falling apart. This woman who wants to be president is talking about fun camps. This is something the Soviet Union did for their citizens. They sent them to fun cruises. Did you know that Hitler sent the Germans on fun cruises in the early days of the Reich, before they were stuffing Jews into ovens? They sent them on fun cruises around the Mediterranean to relax from all that killing. But wait, she doubles down now in clip 18. Listen to this. You won't believe this one.
We need to figure out how to fill that fun deficit, certainly for our kids, but also for the rest of us. You know, we've become, in so many ways, a country that has slowly but surely figured out how to get along with more people from more backgrounds. But there are still differences that we need to get over.
Here we go. Here we go. The race warfare now. Go ahead with the final punchline in 19.
You know, I said the other day at an event that, you know, we're much less racist, sexist, homophobic, all of those things. But we sure don't want to spend time with anybody who we disagree with politically. I mean, that is just too stressful. So, you know, maybe mix it up a little bit. You know, you can have the red cabin.
Oh, this has got to
the stop. Blue cabin. Have to come together and actually listen to each other. Wouldn't that be a novel idea?
Why do we get the lowest form of humanity running for office in this country? How is it the meanest and the lowest level of intellect winds up at the highest? How is this possible? Who is she talking to? We get the meanest and the lowest level of intellect running for the highest office. How does that happen? Can't we get someone who's a little more intelligent running for office? There has to be more intelligence out there than her. I don't care that she's a woman. Give me a woman any day. Give me a woman who'll save this country from the Islamism that is the cancer of our time. Not a word about Islamic terrorism. Not a word about how women are treated by Muslims. Not a word about Iran and the nukes. Not a word about any of this. Instead, the woman comes up with fun camps. She is not fit at any speed. I'm sorry. She's showing herself to be not only out of touch, but I think she's basically out of it altogether. All right, look. The phone number here, I don't have to give you. We're sold out. It's Friday, and it's Rock and Roll Friday. I'll take some calls, but I need some rock and roll to get myself going. I'm not even eating well. I went to the refrigerator, the radio refrigerator, and I reheated a lamb chop from last night. That was okay. Then I reheated potatoes, but I don't have any Irish blood. I don't want them. I would rather eat a side of lamb right now, like in Iraq. You ever see those guys? They're all so big. For a starving nation, what do they eat there? Like a lamb each per day? Like a quarter of a lamb per day? Big guys, man, in Iraq. There's no starvation over there. They don't eat gluten-free pita bread in that country. Everything they eat is from the old world, like an entire lamb, an entire wheat field at dinner. I never saw anything like it. They do things big over there. All right, let me take some calls. WMAL on line two. Go ahead, please.
Hey, this is Joe.
Yeah, and Joe, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, you mentioned earlier about the guy that was in jail for a petty crime, and then you mentioned the president doesn't run the whole country. People in his departments run the country. I got one more thing to throw into that mix, and then you have to ask me how do they all intersect. Is, have you put any thought to the unofficial rift that is going on in the military now?
The unofficial rift?
Yeah, reduction in force.
What do you mean? Yeah, Obama's shrinking the military to a level lower than that before World War One.
Exactly. He's
shrinking the Navy, shrunk the Air Force. He put women who can't fly in charge of the Air Force. He put a woman who can't drive a rowboat in charge of the Navy. Yeah, I'm aware of it.
Exactly. And
yeah, he's destroying the U.S. military. I get it. At the same time, flexing his skinny arms against Putin.
Yes, yes. You've got thousands.
And doing nothing to speak of against ISIS.
That's right. You've got thousands.
Look, ISIS was on the run in the Battle of Tikrit. And then suddenly they counterattacked, and they drove the Iraqi and American advisors back. Obama did not order the U.S. Air Force to destroy ISIS on the ground. He could have done that. Why didn't he?
Because he doesn't know how to run a military. He doesn't listen.
No, it's because he doesn't want ISIS to be destroyed. Apparently he wants ISIS to be, let us say, a containable threat.
That's true.
See, I have a theory that he's saving his attack on ISIS before the presidential election. He's going to let this cancer spread, and then whoever's going to run for the presidency is going to benefit from the powerful man who killed bin Laden to suddenly bring in the entire force of the U.S. military and take them out in a few days. And suddenly he'll be like, wow, look at this. The Democrats are better on the military than better on defense than the Republicans. That's what I fear is going on.
I would have to agree with that, but with the rift, you know, what I would like people to understand is that there are thousands of soldiers being kicked out now, literally kicked out, not retired, not put out on medical, but being kicked out. You know, they served the military, they went to war, they served their country, and they're being kicked out for the slightest, stupidest, menial stuff.
That's right. I understand. It's a purge. It's what Stalin did in the Soviet Union when he killed most of the generals because he thought they were plotting against him. Obama is a maniac who's destroying the military purposely. And the new stooge that they put in the Defense Department is worse than the last stooge. I know this well. I have a whole chapter in a coming book on what he's doing to the military. If you want to see the names of the generals that he's purged to cover up Benghazi, they're in Stop the Coming Civil War, my last bestseller. I saw it then. All right, other topics. Fun camps, Starbucks, the week wouldn't be complete unless we played Mrs. Robinson again, which we'll do when I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
That didn't concern me as much as had he been completely white. And I guess that I worry about races mixing because of the difficulty.
My kind of woman, she speaks her mind, you know? That's what we needed in the White House. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Why is she living there? Did the Lincolns have a mother-in-law live with them? Did Mary Todd Lincoln's mother live in the White House? Something like that. Someone once said, I never saw, is there a precedent for this? The mother-in-law lives in the White House at public expense. It's like public housing now. I mean, everyone pay. They go on trips. I have to pay for it. They take the girls on a spring break. Enormous expense to Japan to see the flowers over there. And I have to pay for that one. Unbelievable to me. But Hillary Kitten proposing fun camps. I can just imagine how this occurred. So she gets in the Hollywood team, the PR agents, the morons from Hollywood who think that the people are stupid, which they are. And I said, look, we got to get this email gate off the headlines. First of all, you look too dour. You look too serious. You didn't play well. Those baggy eyes, they got to go, number one. We'll work on that later. And the next time you go out there, let's talk about something fun. But yeah, what do you mean fun? How am I going to get up there and talk about fun? Fun. What do you mean? People want to talk about the deficit, not about fun. That's it. The fun deficit. That's what we're going to run with. The fun deficit, Hillary. And then this is how something like this happens. Listen to 17. Listen.
As I have gotten older, I have decided we really need camps for adults. None of the
serious stuff, none of the, you know, life challenge stuff, more fun. I think we have a huge fun deficit in America.
I think we have a break. That's about who that's saying that Beavis invited. Robert, you're hitting the 1,000 today. You're just pulling him out of nowhere. I think we have a brain deficit in the office of the presidency, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better in 2016. Can someone with a brain please run? Can someone who can fly a jet please apply for the job as Secretary of the Air Force? Can someone who's commanded a battle group please apply for the job as Secretary of the Navy? This military will look like the Danish military by the time this guy gets through with this country. The Danish military, you get it?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
Suspect in the murder of top model contestant was a dreamer, approved for Obama amnesty. That's right. You won't read that in your local newspaper. The suspect in the murder of an America's Next Top Model contestant, beautiful woman, was an illegal alien who was in the U.S. thanks to Obama's amnesty granted under the 2012 Dreamers policy. You know how we're all told that they're all wonderful? They call me to work. Nancy Pelosi, I don't think she washed his feet. Maybe she washed his knife. This doesn't surprise anyone who already understands just how destructive granting amnesty to illegals in such a blanket manner can be. But the poor girl is dead. This is from the Washington Times now. The illegal immigrant charged with killing an America's Next Top Model contestant was only in the U.S. because President O had granted him amnesty. As a dreamer, Emmanuel Jesus Rangel Hernandez was first arrested on drug charges and was set to go before an immigration judge, but he had his deportation case closed after he was granted amnesty or deferred action in late 2013, according to docs Senator Charles Grassley and Tom Tillis released. The young murderer has now been charged with 3 counts of murder, stemming from the February slaying of 3 persons, including Mirhana Puhar, who had appeared on the Top Model show last year. Do I have to read any more? This is what the cynical administration is doing to you, calling them dreamers. We're supposed to believe they're all coming here to become electrical engineers and doctors and nurses. Amnesty does not attract the kind of immigrants America needs or wants on its soil. For the most part, it gets the criminals and entices them to come here, putting all of our lives in danger. Those who want to come here the right way, obeying the law of the land, are those who work hard and would contribute to American culture and the advancement of society. They don't have rap sheets a mile long. But to Obama, anyone who says he wants to come here is perfectly fine. And we must immediately act to make certain that his executive amnesty order is defunded before more tragedies such as this murder continue to occur under the so-called amnesty for illegal aliens. Yeah, they all come here to work. Ask Nancy Pelosi about it. And by the way, the next time you go into a Starbucks and they want to discuss race, ask them what they have to say about the suspect in the murder of the top model contestant was a dreamer approved for Obama amnesty. See what the poor barrister has to say. Or better yet, send it to the CEO, Mr. Schultz, and ask him what he has to say about it. All right, let's move on. Fun camps, yeah, that's what we need. Callers are a big deal. Got to get to some. WABC on line 9. Go ahead, please, from New York City. You're on the Savage Nation.
This is Savage. I woke up this morning hearing Hillary talking about fun camps. I think fun camps were brought, like my grandfather used to tell me, he passed away, God bless his soul, but he came from 1917 Russia. Fun camps were guys with bayonets and guns shooting people because you didn't put the potatoes in the ground. That's what fun camps were.
Oh, I missed that. What do you mean? You mean it was fun for the ones with the bayonets killing the innocent?
Well, my grandfather luckily got in a boat to get hell out of Russia before it became the Soviet.
You mean America was a fun camp for him, leaving that behind?
Yeah, well, God bless. My father was born here. I was born here. But the other thing made me spit my...
Yeah, I thank God my grandfather didn't go to, let's say, Paris. I'm glad he landed in New York. You know, I thought about that. A lot of the people who emigrated at that time from Europe, they could have gone anywhere. They could have gone to South America, right? Canada. New York. Not everyone from Russia went to New York. You'd think so. Some of them went to New Orleans, you know what I'm saying? I thank God my grandfather didn't go to Paris. Could you imagine if I wouldn't be here, first of all. I mean, you look at the sequence of, you ever think about that? Would you be here if? Have you ever thought about that? Is there a biologist in the house who could answer this question? Although I'm learned in some areas of biology, certainly not all, and I'll admit it, obviously, I've often wondered about this, and I'm not trying to be, you know, facetious about it. The sperm and the egg thing. What if of those millions of sperms, a different sperm had penetrated the ovum? Would it be a different, would Robert be a different call screener? Would he even be here? Let's take Robert out of it. I'll go to myself. I'm asking, seriously, or you. Have you ever thought about your mother, okay? Father's sperm, millions, like 360 million or whatever the number is. And one lucky little devil gets through the ovum. The others die. You ever think about that one? Which sperm gets through? I did study this when I was a youth. It's why I love biology so much. So many questions just came jumping out at me, like which sperm got through and why? Well, let's see. It was not the sperm that was helped by the government. It was not the sperm that said that I'm a minority sperm and I need you to get out of my way because I've been oppressed. Which sperm got through to the ovum? The most survivally, the most advantageous sperm from the point of view of survival. In other words, the toughest bird got through, right? That's how nature selects for the healthy. Now we get into the whole IVF thing. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You want me to go down that road? You know, I know there are people who would love to have children who can't. I have a little different feeling about that. I'm from another time. I'm not on the side of the guy in England, the singer with the boyfriend. Not because they're gay. But the whole idea of fertility treatment worries me greatly because nature has its own way of dealing with these things. And I don't know that everyone is supposed to have children, incidentally. I'm not positive that the natural way is the wrong way. Excuse me, I haven't been brainwashed yet in a fun camp. But getting back to the sperm and egg thing, is there a biologist in the house who can call? Open up one line, Jim. I don't know, because I'm going to get people who don't know the answer and make it up. Of the 300 and some odd million sperm, and one gets through, what if another one got through? Would I be the same person today? I don't think so, right? Do you realize what the odds are of that happening, that you're actually here? You have any idea what a miracle you are? You know, if you're depressed, I'll tell you something. You want a cure for depression? Think about how precious you are. Now I'm starting to sound like a preacher. I swear to you, think about that. Think about the miracle of your birth, the odds against it, the odds against you even being here. So what, you were put here to be a miserable walking around, woe is me, carrying a cloud over you? Woe is me, I'm miserable, the world is bad, God picked on me, what did I do wrong? No, you weren't picked for that. I could get into a preacher mode right now. You were picked for a glorious life. I really mean that. If only you'd understand that you do have the spark of divinity in you and the spark of God in you, the spark of nature in you, you realize what power you really have. That's uncovering the secret power within. Maybe I should go into that field altogether. I'm a very inspiring speaker. I think maybe I'm wasting my time talking about Obama and his war on America. This is what people really tune in for, is the fun and the, you know, the sarcasm. But really, underneath it all, I think they really want Guru Mike to come out. I think that they want the guru in me to come out. They want me to get robes and buy 300 acres in Oregon somewhere and invite them to give me their life saving. I could have done that years ago. I always had that little guru streak. I never did that. Didn't want to do it. They were such frauds, those guys. They never wound up well, incidentally, most of those fraud artists. Look at the guy who ran Est. He's a bag man in London now. I don't really know the guy who started it. That was such a big thing. He was last seen like disheveled in a London street. Well, now, how about that faker from India with the 16 Rolls Royces up there in Oregon, in Antelope, Oregon? It didn't work out well. And why did he get diabetes? From sitting on his behind all day on a cushion. And then, you know, there's no health involved. Everyone thinks that because they're ethnic, they wear a thing on their head, and they speak Sanskrit, or they write in Sanskrit, and they speak in a foreign language, and they go mumbo jumbo. They put their hand in front of themselves. They're going to live like for 113 with black hair. It doesn't work that way. That's why I'm a good guru, because I'm a realist guru. I'm a guru of realism. I think I should consider it at some point, but I wouldn't be in Oregon. I don't know if I could do it in Oregon. I don't know where I would do it. Is there a state that I could create some kind of new city in, a savage nation world? Do you have any idea what would happen? Do you have any idea how fast the government would infiltrate it and undermine it? You think I haven't thought this through? I don't even do live events anymore because I know the government would undermine them and send, you know, the wrong people in there. So I wouldn't put you at risk. That's why I generally don't do live events anymore. It's why I'm a kind of reclusive personality. Some do it. I don't think that they challenge the system that much, so they get away with it. And there's no chance of that agent provocateur business that I fear. Because those of us who are truly seers are real threats to an established order that is absolutely out for the destruction of mankind. How's that for a paragraph? That work for you? Okay. Let's move on. Callers. Let's try some callers from around the country and around the nation. Both the same, by the way. Line 8. What's your name, city, and station?
Denise from KOH in Reno, Nevada. And my topic for you, Dr. Savage, is first to wish that I had you at my holiday dinners and in my book club, because you would be such a joy to have at both. And secondly...
Is that an invitation?
Oh, it's definitely an invitation. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I have a family. I generally go out with them, and we just, you know, eat turkey and argue, that kind of thing.
What fun it would be to have you arguing with my family, who are often too scared to take on the topics that you do. Thank you for being courageous.
Yeah, but we don't argue over politics in my family. We argue over family matters. I'm joking. No, we get along. I make that up. I just like it's a show thing. We get along very well, truthfully. We never see each other. We eat on separate trays in separate zip codes. It's a wonderful Thanksgiving every year.
So the books that my book club have been reading, one of them is The Power of Kindness by Piero Ferrucci. Are you familiar with that?
No. Is there power in kindness?
Well, he's an Italian psychiatrist. It was so nice. I'm a therapist, and it was so nice to hear a European viewpoint, and he put little stories from different cultures around the world in every chapter and made it fascinating.
Yeah, but you see, let me say, my immediate gut instinct, you know what it was to what you just said? First, I was thrilled that you're a therapist, because I have a therapist in my family, and I love her dearly. That's number one. And I know how hard it is to be a really good therapist. It's a terribly hard job to carry around the toxicity of all these people you have to see every day. It takes a very strong personality to do that. But when you talked about Italian psychiatrist, it was almost an oxymoron to me. That was the first thought. They didn't compute in my head. That was number one. If you had said German psychiatrist, okay, but that was number one. But number two, you said kindness in Italy? They're losing their nation because of their kindness. They need more militancy in Italy to survive. They're being overrun by immigrants from Africa. They're being overrun by Muslims. They don't know what to do to protect their own country. So I don't think it's the right time to talk about kindness. And I don't want to sound like some hard moron, but I'll tell you, the age of kindness is over. Now, you wouldn't want that at your dinner table, would you?
I would want that, because we need to stand up and get some ovaries and some cojones. I'm with you, Dr. Savage.
So you're a therapist who's given towards realism.
Absolutely, and a patriot.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, who was the therapist that was young, I think, who didn't cater to patients, who didn't tell them that they were right and that everybody was wrong and whatever they felt was correct? There was a school of therapy many, many decades ago where they admonished people who were just plain bad people. Has that gone out the window in therapy today? No, today is everything the person does is right, and everyone around them is no good.
Absolutely not. Some of us still stand up and represent, like Albert Ellis in Rational Emotive Behavioral Therapy, a good New Yorker who would chew people out. He was wonderful.
Oh, it was Ellis who did it, who would tell them, you know what, you're a horrible person. I never want to see you again. Get out of here.
Absolutely.
See, that's the kind of therapist we need in America. Not like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry that you had to molest your niece like that. It must have been something she did that triggered you.
And that never worked.
No, you cannot placate psychotics like that and evil people. Do you actually believe that there are evil people?
Absolutely. There's good and there's evil. There's light.
No, of course there are evil people. I mean, do you believe people can be born evil?
I'm not sure about that. I think that they make choices, and maybe they're demented, and maybe they were dropped on their head or raised by wolves, but definitely... it's a possibility.
I believe, having looked at human life from my perspective, that there are people who are born bad. Of course, people can become bad through being treated like animals, hit by a father or hit by a mother, punished, verbally abused. You can turn a nice person into a maniac. But I believe that in addition to that road to evil, there's also those who are just born evil. And I believe it's a product of genetics, and let's say the mother or the father, for that matter, was on drugs. There are children who come out completely incapable of a social life, right?
Well, there you go. Genetics, drugs, and all those things put together. That's why I say, sometimes I say they're dropped on their head or raised by wolves. There are a lot of factors that could inflict.
So who do you think I go to for my therapy?
Oh, I would love to be a fly on the wall, Dr. Savage.
Unfortunately, he speaks dog. His name is Teddy. He's a 10-pound poodle. When things really get bad, I get down on my knees and I talk to him. And thus far, he's never answered me, thank God. The day he starts answering me, I'll check myself into a bug house. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
I'm not in a composed mood. I don't feel good. Knock it off. Maybe another day. I don't know. Maybe it's the eclipse or something. I feel like my brain is eclipsed by something today.
Supermoon eclipse. I don't know. I didn't feel a thing, nothing. Same as every other morning. Miserable, wake up, horrible, another day. From 6 in the morning, I got to plan another show without mentioning the word Obama once. Almost impossible. Look at this headline. Pope Francis to dine with gay and transgender inmates in Naples prison. What is he doing? That violates all of the tenets of Catholicism. It's an affront to the Catholic believer. If you want to do that, go do it, but not as the Pope. He's supposed to be the leader of the Catholic Church, not the follower of liberalism. Same as in America, supposed to be the leader, right? I didn't mention his name. Here's another one. UN says Israel is the number one violator of women's rights. That's right. That's right. The Salenterates at the UN are not talking about ISIS enslaving women, raping women, kidnapping women, burying women alive. No, the number one violator of women's rights, according to the vermin at the UN, Israel.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The news is dismal. The news is horrendous. The world is falling apart as a result of, I'm sorry, I won't say the word. In fact, you fill in the word. Who was the architect of the Arab Spring? She wants a fun camp now. As a result of the Arab Spring, there are 1.2 million Syrian Christians who are fleeing as a result of Miss Fun Camp. There are refugees fleeing out of the Middle East, mainly Christians, who are being slaughtered by Muslims, all because of you-know-who's fun camps. That's what's going on, and she wants to be president. How much damage can she do in the world and still run for office, I'd like to know. Look at the number of people. Millions of people are fleeing the Middle East. They're burning churches. They're killing Christians. They're raping women, killing children, enslaving children. And the UN votes that Israel has the worst record on human rights for women. You hear? And the UN's not going to save the world. The UN's part of the problem, not part of the solution. It's run by the same goon squad that's slaughtering people. So look at what's going on in the world, and she wants to be president. She comes up with the fun camp thing. What else is in the news? Israel's the number one violator of women's rights. Not Syria, where rape and other sexual violence and torture is being used against women as a tactic of war by ISIS. Not Iran, where every woman who registered as a presidential candidate in the last election was disqualified. Where adultery is punishable by death, by stoning. Women who fight back against rapists and killer attackers are executed in Barack Obama's friendly country of Iran. The friendly country of Iran, where Obama is very popular, bars female judges. The wonderful nation of Iran that Obama has tremendous respect for In that nation, women must obtain the consent of their husbands to work outside the home. Can you believe this? And yet the Obama administration turns their back on Israel and opens their arms to these monster mullahs. In fact, it's crazier than that. This morning we woke up again to the Iranian pledge. Could we have that one, please? The
Nowruz Mubarak. And Nowruz Atan Peruz.
See, that's what we need in America. He's not here for Thanksgiving. He's on a junket somewhere for Christmas. July 4th, him and the wife are somewhere else. But somehow he knows every Persian holiday. How does that figure? How come he knows every Muslim holiday on earth that he happens to be home during that period of time? It's unbelievable to him. And now he's lecturing the Iranian leaders, which in clip 4 we have to hear this a little bit just for the heck of it. What the heck?
Iran's leaders have a choice between two paths. If they cannot agree to a reasonable deal, they will keep Iran on the path it's on today, a path that has isolated Iran and the Iranian people from so much of the world, caused so much hardship for Iranian families, and deprived so many young Iranians the jobs and opportunities they deserve.
Well, that's nice. That's something you'd expect from a college provost. That's really going to penetrate the skulls of the mullahs. Oh, that speech was really... That was peace through strength, you know, at its best. There's another Nobel in it for this one. Okay, you know, you can ridicule it all you want, but it just, we're sitting here on the side not believing this. This is going on. Now listen to how Pollyanna-esque President O is in clip 5. This is astounding.
If Iran's leaders can agree to a reasonable deal, it can lead to a better path. The path of greater opportunities for the Iranian people. More trade and ties with the world. More foreign investment and jobs, including for young Iranians. More cultural exchanges and chances for Iranian students to travel abroad.
Yeah, bring them all in.
More partnerships in areas like science and technology and innovation.
Bring in to work for Zuckerberg for a dollar.
In other words, a nuclear deal now can help open the door to a brighter future for you, the Iranian people.
Why is he bothering saying that? The Iranian people are prisoners. They're living in a prison state. Why doesn't he lecture the mullahs that he just gave a speech to? Instead of stabbing Israel in the back at every chance he gets. Well, whatever. You get the picture. You know why. His middle name isn't Jesus. It's not Moses either. Am I allowed to notice that? I mean, you know, what if there was a president whose name was Robert Jesus Jones?
Nowruz Mubarak. And Nowruz Atan Peruz.
What if we had a candidate, Robert Jesus Jones, was running for office? You could see the boys at the New York Times literally going insane. Ooh, his middle name is Jesus. Does that mean he's going to put Jesus ahead of everyone else? Is he going to favor Christians? How can we have a president who's so partisan toward the Christian religion in a polyglot nation, in a multicultural nation? Ooh, his name is Jesus. Robert's laughing. I know it's funny. The dog isn't with me today. Normally, Teddy is my... He sits through a whole show and he doesn't move. Unless I get very angry, then he gets agitated. Questions for the Savage Nation. Do Obama's actions with Israel and Russia worry you? How is Obama making a video talking to the people of Iran going to make any difference? Do you feel Hillary is getting desperate to talk about fun camps? Have you tried to talk to a Starbucks barista about race? I don't know. I don't know where the word barista came from. When I was a kid, if you worked in a luncheonette and you served coffee, it was a kid working in a luncheonette. There was no job category for that. I worked in a luncheonette. I washed dishes. I served coffee. I made sodas. Oh, we were called soda jerks. That's what we were called, soda jerks. And we washed dishes in between. I knew I was only a soda jerk. I hated the job. My arms up to the armpit in dirty water. I wanted to do that the rest of my life. I had to do it to make a buck in high school. So I did it. I didn't think it was a career. These poor kids who work in Starbucks, they know it's not their life. So now why are you pressuring them to become little mini Nazis, lecturing everybody about race while serving them a cup of Java? Here's a real loaded question. What will the line that Obama crosses finally make people rise up and stop him? Is there anything this maniac can do that will say, that's it, it's over, that's the end of the road? Is there anything the maniac can do that will stop him? That the people will finally say enough is enough and demand action? Anything. Is there anything this man can do? Anything. What can he do next? Tell me. Yesterday was mandatory voting, which Goebbels covered up for today. Goebbels said, no, he didn't really mean it. He meant it. He didn't really mean it. He wasn't talking about it. He thought he was. He had an analysis from another time if he was really, and there were no libertarians. He might have thought about it. And although it was done in Australia and Hong Kong and once in a while in North Korea, they were, we didn't really mean it. While the president said there should be mandatory voting, he didn't actually mean mandatory, didn't mean voting. He meant in the abstract, in an intellectual way, that possibly there should be mandatory voting, but not exactly in this country today, at another time perhaps, when there's a more idealistic American people who can accept his ideas. There should be mandatory voting. He didn't really mean it. He tried it. He said it. Didn't really mean it. He didn't try it either. You get the picture. Thanks, Jackie. I appreciate that. That's a riff Jackie created, that whole thing, Mason. I love that one. He didn't give me the words, but I can do the thing. I can do the thing. The thang. I like to do the thang. Why am I not on spring break? Why do college kids get to take a spring break and I don't? Answer, I hate spring break. I'm thinking going back to Florida, even though I hated it so much 2 weeks ago. What is that with me? I was there 2 weeks ago. I spent a fortune making sure the studio worked for a month in advance. Robert had to come in on Sundays to test it with engineers, and I flew there. I was thrilled. Everything worked. The first day, I almost had a heart attack. Remember in the third hour, the system failed? I have an MPLS system in that studio. And apparently, the equipment was set to go off automatically after 9 hours. It went off in the ninth, in the third hour. Can you, while I was on break, thank God. I came back screaming, what's going on, this and that. But then it worked fine. Then I did the show in L.A. a few weeks before that. Because every time I go somewhere, I want to be on the radio. So what's the point of going anywhere if I'm just going to be on the radio? I'm in the Bay Area because I love the weather. I like the allergies. I like the maniacs here. I like sneezing. I like being depressed. It's a wonderful place to live. Why would I want to go anywhere else? All you do on vacation is either you drink too much or you eat too much. That's another reason I don't go anywhere. I think about that a lot. In the years in between my other career in radio, I spent a lot of time in the afternoons in San Francisco. I had a little room and I would write, and I wrote some very good things, but I did drink a lot. I mean, I drank and I ate in the afternoon, slept, and then I got up and I worked. But that's all you do when you have spare time. You sleep, you eat, and you drink and walk around the streets, let's say. I'd rather do that than jog. The reason I've never had any surgery on my joints is I don't run. You don't understand how damaging running is, which is why I don't do it. I ran until I was 31, and then I gave it up. Did I tell you the running story? I actually wrote for Runner's Magazine, if you think that I don't know what I'm talking about. In the 70s, I wrote a few articles for Runner's Magazine on nutrition. I was one of the guys in the field. So I was running once. I was thin, 135 pounds. I had 132 cholesterol. Would you believe it? Like I was like a Somali beekeeper. Perfect shape. I was near death. I never felt more insane and miserable than living on that low-fat diet and running. So one day, and I used to run in the back of a town in a community, in a county north of San Francisco, and I would run to a waterfall. Every dad, young kids, and I didn't want to die young. I'd, okay, I better run. So I'd run in the back of the valley. I'd run up to a waterfall. I'd run back. I did this over and over again. I hated every minute of the running. I couldn't stand it, but I did it. It's like good for me, right? No, wrong. One day I'm running, and I hear an inner voice screaming, stop running, stop running. It was like a psychotic break. Don't run, you'll kill yourself. Stop running, stop. I never ran again for the rest of my life, ever. It's called listening to your inner voice, my friends. I've been bicycling almost every day since then. Yes, low impact, gentle bicycling. If you do long term, good luck to you, fine. I don't. I do a very small amount of bicycling every day, flat street, because you know the Kellogg's cornflakes? Well, Dr. Kellogg, who created the cornflakes in Battle Creek, Michigan, he used to bicycle to town every day in his suit and tie, and he didn't do it to, like, get cardio. He did it for equilibrium and balance. I never forgot that. Not everything about exercise is about sweating until you're near a stroke. It's about equilibrium, balance, harmonium. So let's say you jump in the ocean to take a swim. The Greek method of swimming, if the Greeks still swim, was to swim until your body's warm. Whatever that is, your body got warm, you stopped, you turned around, right? You didn't swim till you stroked out or got bitten by a shark. If you bicycle, it doesn't mean you have to bicycle 50 miles. If you do, God bless you. Just bicycle till you feel a balance in your whole being, that's all. That's my theory. It's kind of a very balanced theory. Is there anything wrong with that? Why don't we have a balanced president? I won't say his name. I swore to you, this is going to be an Obama. Oh, I did it! Ah, God, I meant to say it's going to be an Obama-free hour, and I said his name. I said it twice now. This is going to be I can't take it anymore. Can he please just leave the office? Is there any way we could raise money for him to leave? We could buy that house in Hawaii under his real name instead of the three front companies for the transparency. The most transparent president in history, Mr. Seth Rudetsky, bought it in Chicago, and he transferred it to a holding company in Denver, and we don't know who it's for. It's on the beach that he and Michelle like the most. It's around the corner. It's right near it. It's not for him. It's alleged to be for Obama. We don't really know. Apparently, it might be. It could be. We don't know what Seth Rudetsky would be doing there, but they bought it. It could be a holding company for the president. Can we just pay off the mortgage if he'd leave tomorrow? What if we raised $9.7 million and we threw in another $300,000 for, let's say, a basketball court in the back or something? Something he would like. If he would leave early. Just buy him out. Give him a buyout. How come you could buy out executives who are failures, but you can't buy out a president who's a failure? Just give him an early buyout, early retirement. Why? Can't we vote on an early retirement for Obama? That's what I'm getting at. And raise the funds. And say, here's $10 million. Please just leave. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. The only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com.
What if we were to write Race Together on every Starbucks cup? And that facilitated a conversation between you and our customers. And what if our customers, as a result of that, had a renewed level of understanding and sensitivity about the issue?
Thought control, that's all. I'm never going in there again. I didn't like that coffee to begin with. Now I got a lecture to go with it. Has anyone actually gone to a Starbucks and had a conversation about race and asked why there are no Starbucks in certain neighborhoods in America? That would be an interesting conversation. We touched on that yesterday. Anyway, it's an old story. It's pathetic what some of these guys in the corporate world think that they're, you know, alleged to be able to do to us or supposed to do to us. It's like a fun camp for U.S. adults. Brainwashing. Mandatory voting. Michelle Obama's mother was worried about her daughter marrying a biracial man. That would be a good topic to ask in Starbucks. You know, bring that recording in. And Wasserman Schultz, she's a laugh line. No Michelle Obama with Looney Tunes for me today? Did she open her mouth yet today and say something which you can run Looney Tunes behind? 855-400-7282. Let's go to line number three. Go ahead, please. State your name, station, topic.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure. I'm calling from the area of WABC 770 in New York. And I'd like to talk about the UN, because you brought it up before.
Well, go ahead. We'll talk about it. Go.
Well, the question I'd like to ask you is what these clowns are really doing in the UN. You have a good insight on these guys. So what are they really doing? The United States is sent overseas, and we're always left to clean up the garbage around the country. So why isn't the UN sent over there to do all this stuff?
Well, you're asking, you're answering. They're feathering their own nests in a nice way. I could put it in a more vulgar manner, but let's just put it to you this way. Most of the people in the UN are feathering their own nest. There are very hardworking, good people in the UN, but most of it is it's a corrupt organization that has no meaning anymore. It has no validity whatsoever. They're not stopping the murder, the slaughter, the rapes, the kidnappings in the Middle East. So what purpose are they serving after all? What difference do they make? That answers the question. What, I'm going to eat my heart out? That's what we should investigate. Why do we let the UN stand there? How many years have I said it should be turned into a homeless shelter? I've said for years, turn the United Nations building into a homeless shelter. That way you appease the liberals. See how long that lasts. Until they start throwing furniture out of the windows. Gowdy asks Clinton to turn over email server. When last seen, Nancy Pelosi said she never had a servant. And they said, no, Mrs. Speaker, we mean server. She said, well, aren't those the guys in the funny uniforms who serve us coffee? No, we mean server. Yeah, that's what I mean. Someone in a funny uniform who serves us coffee. Isn't that what a server is, said Mrs. Pelosi?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
So much to bash. I mean, how can you stop? But he represents the appearance of a normopath who's actually crazy. He is such a good actor. The man is phenomenal. He's a normopath on the outside and a lunatic on the inside. And don't call me on this. I'm not a psychiatrist. I went into the archive room of the Savage Studio, and I put my hands on one of the first publications I ever worked on. It was a magazine in New York City's literary world called Exit, Urbi et Orbi, from July 1965. And I looked inside of this thing, and I said, what kind of stuff was I writing then? So I'm looking in this magazine, Exit, Urbi et Orbi, from 1965, which I was an associate editor of. I was very proud of that. I didn't make a dime, but I helped sell it on the streets of Manhattan. And I thought I was an intellectual genius in doing so. Well, we reprinted articles by Bertrand Russell and interviews with Malcolm X and things like that. And then I wrote an original article, which is very, very political today, which I just found, and I'm not ashamed to tell you. I'm going to read to you. Then you'll decide what my politics are when I read Who Was at the Helm, written by Michael Savage in 1965, and I'll bring this to you. Here's what I wrote. Recently was brought to my attention that Bertrand Russell and a large body of intellectuals delivered a signed article to the British press which said that mankind must immediately undertake to find new sources for its food supply. The group insisted that should we not immediately act upon this call, we shall find ourselves a species without nourishment. An immediate action was undertaken by the officials in charge. The article was suppressed and appeared in but two British newspapers. The situation related above is indicative of a major problem of mankind, the young Savage wrote. We as a species have not yet insisted that our leaders be men of mind and vision, that is, brains. And then I make a long comparison to a simple creature called the Hydra. I compared it to a Hydra, a tiny sea creature with a half-inch body, which I said is excellent for study in that we may easily observe its activities on a cellular level. And I talked about that when faced with an enemy, the Hydra calls upon cells that are specially equipped for its protection. These cells, the nematoblasts, enclose stinging capsules that have a barbed process of cytoplasm shaped much like a spear. Thus, the problem of defense is met without confusion as to which group of cells is to react. Let me pause right there. Obviously, the police are our defense cells. The military are our defense cells. And yet we have an autoimmune disease in our society which attacks our defense cells. Do you understand what I'm saying? They let radical Muslims into the country who will kill us. They defend radical bums in the gutters of Ferguson instead of the police who were trying to protect life and property. You get it? And then I go on. See, I'm interspersing current events with the young Michael Savage's views of nature and man. And I went on. The nematoblasts, which are obviously evolved for the job of defense, are signaled by the creature's nerve network, and they act. No helter-skeltering of indecision, just decisive action. However, within the creature, mankind, this is not the case. Certainly it responds to a dangerous enemy by sending out its defense cells, soldiers. But it has not yet decided if its cells of defense are naturally equipped for the job. True, there are specialized forces of Marines, commandos, and other expertly trained cells of defense. Still, it has not realized yet that all cells which are made into soldiers are not necessarily evolved for that duty. Obviously, certain of its soldiers would be better as a part of its civilian force. And I go on from there and comparing the Hydra to man. And then I really bring it around to the fact that we have no leadership. And I come to this.
Savage.
Maybe it's good if you're nuts. Look how well it's worked out for America, having a nut in the White House. Salutes Iran and hates Israel. Maybe it's good for America to have a nut. Maybe our experiment with communism will come to an end one day, and we'll realize what progressives really are and how nuts they really are, and we'll never have this experience again. Maybe we'll be free of the progressive plague for 100 years. Is that possible? Progressive. I love that one. Progressive. Progressive, sure. Leading us over the cliff of our own death, that's progressive. Lack the judgment to... I mean, it's unbelievable. It leaves you, like, speechless. Here's a woman who thinks that if she comes up with the word fun camp, you're going to forget the email gate. It's going to go away overnight. You got to hear this if you missed it. I want to hear clip 17 again. Fun
camp. As I have gotten older, I have decided we really need camps for adults. None of the serious stuff, none of the
you know, life challenge stuff, more fun. I think we have a huge fun deficit in America.
Who is the moron who told her to talk about this? Who is the idiot who advised her to do this? You know, back in the 70s, I was a student at the University of California at Berkeley, and there was a professor. In those days, they would talk about fun. That was a word that was used in graduate school. Nobody was having fun. We all hated it. It was very hard work. But the professor used to say, you know, in order to do your research and really do it well, you have to have fun. Remember in the 70s, everyone talked about having fun at your work? That was like a common parlance. This woman is stuck in the past. We don't need fun. We need a leader to save us from the Muslim maniacs who are threatening to annihilate the world. We don't want fun. The only fun was to see them all dead, these maniacs called ISIS. That's the fun we need. We need Gatling guns on the fun called ISIS. We need B-1 bombers on ISIS. That's the fun we'd like to wake up to. A leader who would kill them. That's the fun we need. To wake up finally and see them on fire. To put the plague out. To put the cancer out before it kills the whole world. How could you let a scourge like this rage across the planet? Everyone's asking the same question. And this loose-lipped moron, she is not smart, by the way. She is a dummy. If she thinks coming up with fun camps is going to suddenly, oh, I forgot about Emailgate. We're just going to have fun in fun camps. What is she trying out for the Nancy Pelosi prize? The Looney Tunes prize? I mean, what is she trying to do here? It's unbelievable to me. I blew my stack just now. Maybe my headache will go away now. I can't take this anymore. I feel as though I'm in a brainwashing camp, and every day it gets worse. They turn the screws tighter and tighter and tighter on my head. Every day I see sickness and illness and liberalism and progressivism. It's killing us! Killing the military. Putting an incompetent woman as Secretary of the Air Force, a woman who's never flown an airplane. Is that sane to you? That's real fun, Mr. Obama. Taking a stupid woman who can't drive a rowboat and making a Secretary of the Navy. That's real fun, Mr. Obama. Purging combat generals and replacing them with stooges who never fired a BB gun. That's real fun, Mr. Obama. The Battle of Tikrit was raging a week ago. We saw that the Iraqi military, with some of our men, were about to knock out ISIS in Tikrit. All of a sudden, ISIS counterattacked. Obama refused to send in the Air Force to wipe them off the planet. As a result, the Iraqi military retreated, and ISIS is now firmly in control of Tikrit, killing, murdering, raping, setting people on fire. Why? Is that his idea of a fun camp? And instead of talking about it, he talks about mandatory voting. And we listen to it. I feel like I'm in a concentration camp where every day the commandant gets up and the loudspeakers are so overwhelming wherever you go. You got to listen to their lies and their propaganda. Around the clock, propaganda. Not a word of truth comes out of this man's mouth. And now we have Hillary, a lady in waiting, with the same nonsense? Okay. I made my point. It's late in the day. I realize that. I talked about other things. Talked about the Exit magazine article from 1965 of who was at the helm. I talked about ISIS killings, the Hellcat. I talked about the Showtime movie about the prisoner who had started out as a 19-year-old kid, got into prison because he was a maniac, tough kid. Then he had to protect himself from being raped in jail, so he beat up another inmate or killed him and then beat up a guard. He wound up in the hole. One thing led to another. He's been in prison 25 years, and his life of being beaten almost to death in Florida prisons by, at that time, the guards were maniacs. They beat him with clubs, kick him, almost kill him. And his attempts to get out on parole at a late in life like this, and how it kept getting turned down. But, you know, one woman who loved him kept pushing it with a lawyer, and he got out finally in 2015. And it just shows you what could happen to a person with one mistake in this world. One mistake can land you in prison, and as a result of that, you can wind up with your whole life ruined. You know, not everybody in prison is a bad person. You know that, don't you? And not everybody out of prison is a good person. Do I have to tell you that again? No, my friends, there are no absolutes in any field. But there's a miracle, and the miracle is being alive and being able to reason and being able to see through all of this bull garbage. This bull garbage, but how could she get away with this? How could this woman come up with the idea that fun camps for adults would take our mind off the scandal of Emailgate? And bigger than that is the scandal of the Arab Spring. It was her baby. Do you remember when Gaddafi was about to fall in Libya? And he said, don't kill me, because if you do, Libya will degenerate into a series of tribal leaders, as you see in Somalia, and you'll have hell to pay. Then they killed him. And then Hillary gave a speech. We came, we saw, he died. Ha, 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 ha. You remember that one? Look what Libya's become. The whole North African crescent is degenerating because of her design called the Arab Spring. And instead of being forced to answer to the people for that, she gets away with talking about fun camps on CNN because of the people without a core, like Wolf Blitzer, a non-human. Wolf Blitzer is the closest thing to a non-human being who looks like a human being. But it's not his fault. He just works for a living. He's done what he does what he's told to do, as everyone does in those jobs. Not asking a question. And so maybe it's time not for mandatory voting, but for mandatory intelligence if you're going to run for office. Maybe there should be an intelligence test that could be given to candidates. Anyway, just thinking. And by the way, the best idea I had today was an early retirement for the president through a buyout. Think about that. If you have executives in a corporation who are failing and not doing their job, and you want them to get out, just go before they destroy the company, you give them a golden parachute, you buy them out. Why can't we raise $10 million for Obama? And included, you could use Air Force Two for the rest of your life. You get Air Force Two, you get $10 million. Whatever you need, just please leave. Pack your bags and go. Be out by April 1st. Please, we'll throw in another $1 million if you're out by the end of the month. We need some fresh candidates here in the White House. This is a nightmare. Do you think we're going to survive another year and a half with this man at the pace at which he's escalating his lunacy? I don't think so. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
In Australia and some other countries, there's mandatory voting. It would be transformative if everybody voted. That would counteract money more than anything. If everybody voted, then it would completely change the political map in this country.
And if you stopped hanging around with corrupt billionaires, that would change the political realm pretty good, too. Money is corrupting, you hear? That's how he's buying his $9.6 million mansion in Hawaii, with the contributions from cups that the homeless put out. I don't believe this. You know, Obama, and I have to use his name now, is a classic sophist. I've tried to explain this before. You have to go back to ancient Greece to understand where this school began, where eloquence and good argument was an accomplishment unto itself. And in ancient Greek, they were called sophists. But they realized soon that you cannot reason without matter. And so knowledge then followed in the wake of just speaking. And so the sophists then moved on to science. And that it was through a chain of Socrates, you know, the whole story of Socrates, you know, about Plato, you know, about Aristotle. And the ancient Greeks developed science in order to find out what was true and what was factual. And they were no longer simply rhetoricians or sophists. They were actually leaders. What we have in the White House is a classic sophist. There's no reason there. It's just a man with a booming voice who speaks well. He's a classic sophist. You understand that? That's what you have to understand. That's why people are agitated about the man. You can call him a liar or an empty suit if you want. That's an inelegant way to put it. But you see, the world was moving rapidly in ancient Greece, moving forward. Systematic collection of knowledge, which we now call science. Facts were gathered over the centuries, and people examined these facts way back in the 3rd century. And the human race had left behind the childlike, dreamlike methods of primitive thought, and they entered a disciplined and critical attack upon the problems of life. And now we seem to be going back into the weird symbolism and imagery of the ancient gods and god monsters and all the taboos and awes and restraints that encumbered mankind prior to the advent of reason. It seems that systematic thinking is gone under Obama. It seems that we've gone back 1,000 years under Obama, not 1,000 days. Just as ISIS wants to drag the world back to the 9th century with Obama's sophism, he is dragging us back to a time before reason. At least that's one man's opinion. And thank you for listening to The Savage Nation.